You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here with the Reigning Jays. I am your host, Samuel Jamison Packard III, a.k.a. Ladies Love Cool Jam, a.k.a. Young Baby Jamwich. And folks, the Celtics season is over as they lose 116-91 in Game 5 to the Milwaukee Bucks in a game that was never really close. The Celtics, I thought, did a good job of at least trying for the first three quarters. Here to talk about that, basically the beginning of a crazy Celtics offseason, and then just the random other things that kind of, like, this is when the NBA season really starts. It's full junk time. We've got Chris Grenham from Nesson.com. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm sad, Jam. It's that was not the way I thought the Celtics were going to go down. It felt like they were down by 39 points the entire game. I was shocked that they hung in, and by hung in, I mean like stuck to being down 12 points for as long as they did. I thought that was relatively impressive if you're going to try and turn that into a positive, but that was a pretty poor way to end the season.
Yeah, that third quarter there, it was basically just like they're doing a pretty good job of keeping it at 10, and then they just didn't make any shots. They finished the game shooting 31% from the field, which is just not great.
No, and it felt like it was one of those cases where they just couldn't get over that hump. It was like, all right, they cut it to 9 again, and then the Bucks would turn around and go on another 7-0 run, and then it would be right back to, you know, a 15-point game. They just could not get over that hump. It was extremely frustrating to watch, but there was just no urgency, and I don't really want to say effort, but there was a lack of urgency the whole series except for game one, and I thought that was basically the case again tonight.
Yeah, no, I thought they were trying. They had these great moments in the first half where basically Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart checked into the game. And maybe I'm just believing this because it's the only thing Chris Webber would talk about was like the energy of the two Morrises. But they did come in and go on a 12-0 run, and it did feel like they brought some kind of needed just effort, energy, kind of hard-nosed plays throughout the game. And especially contrast that with the first quarter that Kyrie Irving had, or basically the first half. It was almost like performance art. It was so bad.
Tweet that. That made me laugh out loud when I saw that tweet, because it basically was. His shot selection was like he was just trolling everyone to follow up that "I should have taken 30 shots" quote.
He did a turnaround fadeaway, like, but he like deliberately like went into his defender. Yeah. It was one of the worst shots I've ever seen.
Some of the shots he took in the first quarter were so bad. They weren't even somewhat decent looks at the hoop. They were so bad. But I know that'll probably take like a lot of the headlines, but he was so absurdly bad on defense again tonight, where he just blatantly leaves his man.
That was atrocious.
And he'll just point. I think B-Rob tweeted out a good.
He did.
Yeah, he tweeted out a good clip of it, I think, once. And someone else did as well. But he just blatantly leaves his man. And then he runs over to someone else's and he just points him off. It's like, all right, that's not the way defense works. That's generally not the way you play basketball. It just, that completely rattled me.
No, like, why was he volunteering to guard Giannis? Like, what are you going to do? The Bucks were deliberately hunting that matchup out. Why would you help him out like that?
Right, and he was just bringing, I don't know if he was trying to, like, prove him wrong. Oh, it was driving me crazy.
It was insane. But really, like, there's the Celtics for the past four games just could not stop the Bucks. Tonight, Brad Stevens changed the lineup. It was a big change. They brought Aaron Baines in to start. And I don't know, I thought like Baines did a good job of being large and burly. But
that's what Giannis
eventually got it going. But Giannis actually had a pretty quiet first half. And he only finished with 20 points, but that's just because everyone else on the team was just making shots. Ilyasova had 10 points, George Hill 10, Malcolm Brogdon, who was back, 10, Bledsoe 18, Middleton 19, Mirotic 10.
I mean, that's like ideal. If you're a Bucks fan, that is perfect right there. But I think a major difference from Giannis last year as opposed to this year is if he has a quiet half like he did in the first half, he's not necessarily making his teammates better. Tonight he was. Like, his court vision has gotten so much better over the last year, and specifically his passing. Like, he was making a couple cross-court passes in that first half when he wasn't necessarily scoring, but he was finding the open man, where in last year's series he just was not doing that. He just didn't really have that in his arsenal. So even though he wasn't scoring, he was still, you know, relatively impressive. I think he finished with 8-8. In addition to however many points he had.
Yeah, he had 8 assists, 8 rebounds. He also was 8 for 14 from the field, so he was efficient tonight. But it's interesting, his passing is, like, the Celtics, everyone talks about their defense against Giannis as putting up a wall and getting guys back and putting up a wall. And they also talk about, like, the gravity of Steph Curry and how much attention he draws with his shot, but, like, the gravity of Giannis with how much attention they're giving him, and it's, like, kind of, like, Kyrie is taking it to way too far by just, like, completely leaving his man.
Yeah.
But the attention that he grabs, it's just like the weak side D has been a major problem for the Celtics. They gave up, at least in this series, they gave up a lot of just weak side threes. And it makes sense if you're basically constantly trying to get into the lane to stop Giannis because you have to send multiple guys at him. And so for Giannis to make the leap to just start passing now is just like, oh, well, what the hell are we supposed to do?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know what you're supposed to do. And I see that being an issue for the Sixers or the Raptors, whoever they end up getting in the second round. I don't know how else you're supposed to attempt to defend this guy. It's literally impossible. And if he continues to develop at this rate and potentially gets a somewhat consistent three-point shot, he's actually going to be impossible to defend. I don't see how you can soundly defend that guy. It's remarkable.
It's going to be very interesting. I'm hoping the Raptors move on so we can see Kawhi against Giannis, because that's going to be an amazing one-on-one matchup. As for, like, the rest of the game, like, we got fourth quarter Yabu minutes. Like, as soon as Yabu's in the game, it's just like, that's a white flag. I feel like it was cathartic for the fan base, because they were just like, all right, we can accept the loss, we can move on quicker. Like, everyone got their jokes off in the fourth quarter. It was kind of good.
I think Brad did that for Twitter, because it was like, all right, like, I know these people are dying. They're dying a very slow death, and until I put the nail in the coffin with the Yabu being the hypothetical nail, I can't let them be free. So by doing that, we could all start looking towards the offseason with 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So I respected that move. But if you had told me that at the beginning of the year this season was going to end by getting waxed by the Bucks in Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Semifinals, and it was going to have to do with Yabu coming in with 9 minutes left, I would have told you were insane. But it was that was quite the nail in the coffin for Brad.
Yeah, it was an extremely ugly fourth quarter. We even had the classic Brad Wanamaker making a pass, and people complain about Wanamaker over Rozier. Like, it was the perfect encapsulation of this Celtics season, where it was just generally disappointing. And it's just like, of course, their offense is the thing that failed them. They scored 19 points, 20 points, and then 23 points in the second and third quarter. They just did not make any shots. Tatum 3 for 10, Horford 4 for 13, Kyrie 6 of 22, putting up Kobe numbers. Jalen was 3 for 9, Gordon Hayward 3 for 9. It was just pure ugliness all around.
Where do you stand with Hayward? Because it was, I mean, he went as the roller coaster went this year. Obviously, he had those couple games against Minnesota early in the year when we all thought he was back, but then I thought he was playing the best basketball of his season against the Pacers in the first round. And I was super confident in him going into the series, and then he just immediately regressed. So I don't know if it has to do with, like, his opponents and the way he approaches playing certain opponents. And obviously a lot of the credit goes to Milwaukee because they're a ridiculously good defensive team, but like, I don't know what happened to him. He immediately regressed faster than I ever thought possible.
Yeah, no, it's just seemed like he's like riding the wave of the team. So as soon as the team like went down, it's like, oh, there goes Gordon Hayward.
Right.
I don't know. They kept on talking like Weber and Marv Albert, who's legally blind. Marv Albert should not be allowed to say anything.
We'll touch on those two clowns by the end of this. We'll get to them.
But they kept saying like, oh, Hayward looks like he's in rhythm. I saw some tweets about like Hayward has the bounce tonight. It certainly didn't look like any different. I just don't know logically why he fades so much. Like, I think he gets a pass just because of the injury, but like, I have no idea what he's going to become. But he wasn't good, Irving wasn't good, and Al Horford wasn't good. And I came into this playoff saying if the Celtics are going to succeed, they're going to need to have Kyrie and Al Horford kind of be the ones who lead them there. And so if they combine for 24 points, you're pretty much screwed.
Yeah, when Al Horford's mid-range stuff wasn't falling and he just looked kind of out of sync early on, that's when I realized like, they might be in some pretty serious trouble here, because he's normally the guy who, no matter what's going on, he's okay, at least decent, and his mid-range stuff is falling. But he was in trouble. It still frustrates me. I mean, I get that it's not a simple solution, but I still think Brad could have gone back to a little more of Kyrie and Al's two-man game at the top. I really think that that's when the Celtics kind of are at their best, when they can go back to that. And they went away from it quite a bit in this series. And again, it's not that simple of a fix, especially against a defensive team like the Bucks. But still, I don't know. I thought that was a little bizarre.
Yeah, no, it's weird because Kyrie had such a bad series. Like you think that matchup would feature him either. Like, if the Bucks are going to switch him roasting whoever they send at him, I guess it would be Brooke Lopez or Ilyasova. And it's just that happened occasionally. And Kyrie just was never able to like consistently make the Bucks pay for those switches. No one on the Celtics was able to, like, the talk of the series going in was like, man, they could probably play Brooke Lopez off the floor, or like Mirotic can't play enough defense. But I think the way they play, and with just having Giannis behind them to kind of like clean up the mistakes at the rim, if they're with a slower foot speed, that just the Bucks defense is, they're like, it's a cliche, but you got to give credit to the Bucks on this one. Like, they're solid team.
No, really, you really do. Like, it does sound super cliche, but you really
do. It's like
do.
Ultimate coach speak.
Yeah, literally, we're just throwing around buzzwords right now. But I think when they traded for Mirotic, so many of us, myself included, said, like, this team, that's a great pickup, but they still can't afford to switch against the Celtics. But I think it comes down to them just being a better defensive team than we all gave them credit for. And also, like you just said, the Celtics just not being able to punish those switches like we thought they would have. So it's credit on one side and a little disappointment on the Celtics side.
Disappointment on the Celtics side. That's the fantastic way to describe the season. When we come back from this break, we are going to hear from Brad Stevens, because I thought his post-game press conference was pretty interesting and is a kind of a good explanation for what went wrong with this Celtics season. So me and Chris will listen to Brad, and then we'll discuss what went wrong for the Celtics when we come back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Can you capsule the disappointment of this game, kind of the season? Just didn't seem to work out as if anyone expected.
Well, I think that obviously we've rehashed the season enough. It was clearly ups and downs, and as we navigated to find our way as a team and to play our best basketball as a team, you know, there were a couple teams out there that were really building towards something. And sometimes I think that goes unnoticed, but, you know, this game was disappointing. I thought we missed a ton of opportunities in the first half to make it closer than 13 at halftime. And then I thought we had started off just kind of chipping away at the start of the second half, and then there were multiple possessions there where they got to loose balls and those types of things at some point later in the third quarter. But before that, you know, Gary, I think obviously our issues have been well chronicled, and hats off to them. They are one hell of a basketball team. And what I just talked about was they've been building habits every day, and those habits showed up, and they showed up over and over again. And, you know, we make a teaching tape every year for our teams about different things, closeouts, recovering, flying around. Bucks are going to be on a lot of clips. I mean, they were tremendous. And credit them, credit their coaches, credit their players. They're better than we are, and they earned that, and it was clear throughout a five-game series.
Mark Murphy, Boston Herald, Brad, I know you've been focused on anything but this, but has it occurred to you at all how much this team might change from this point going forward?
Yeah, I mean, you don't really think about it. I mean, Mark, we all can pay attention to all the talk and everything else, but you don't really think about it until it's over. And, that's not really my lane. I'm certainly consulted on it, but, I understand, that we did meet the outside expectations. And we really rode a roller coaster a lot of the year. It was difficult, but I do think I told the guys in there I did think they showed a lot of character at a lot of different times to keep coming back and to stay together. And I've said from the get go, this team in the locker room when they're all together is great. We just couldn't find it playing together as well as we had hoped. Coach Brad Buff, Mark D'Amico, Celtics.com. When you look at the offensive woes that you guys went through tonight, do you compare that or see that as comparable to Game 7 of last year's Eastern Conference Finals? Why not? That was a defensive dogfight both ways, 87-79. No, I did not feel the same way. Although I thought we were guarding great in the first half. Again, we went into middle of the second, they have 29 points or whatever it is. Like, you feel really good about the way you're doing things, and then as more shots get missed, as we turned it over, as we made mistakes at the rim, and they flew out on us. At that point, they just kept hammering at the rock until it cracked and it cracked.
Brad, Gary Marsh, we did. Brad, what did your team lack? I mean, the Bucks, obviously, you said they're better than you.
Yeah.
What did you lack this year? And how helpless of a feeling does it seem to be for you where you couldn't put it together regardless of what you tried to do?
There's all kinds of different things that I think we can get better at, Gary. I don't want to pinpoint one. I've got the whole summer to rehash that. I do think when you get into the series, like the points at the rim that they got, and the points at the rim that they didn't give up they just stand out like a sore thumb. You're fighting, scratching, clawing for every look. They protected the rim and the paint much better than we did, and flew around shooters much better than we did. Again, I can't say enough good things about the Bucks, Coach Bud. They all deserve incredible credit.
Coach John Corrales, MassLive.com. One of the hallmarks of your teams going back to the beginning has been the fight and the good habits that you're talking about. This season was really not much of that. What was different about this team?
I mean, that's probably the part that eats at me the most, right? 12 years, been a head coach for 12 years. We let go of the rope more and cracked more. Probably should have, and we need to be better than that. But the team that doesn't crack usually wins, and these guys just kept the game pounding at us. I'll be the first to say that this is, as far as any other year that I've been a head coach, certainly been the most trying. I think I've done. I did a bad job. Like, at the end of the day, like, as a coach, if your team doesn't find its best fit together, that's on you. So I'll do a lot of deep dives and how I can do better.
Coach, basically, Yahoo Sports, you
when you talk about some of the outside things about the future, you said it didn't affect you. Do you think it affected guys on the inside longer, sure, maybe more than it should have?
Well, I don't want to, like, I don't want to speculate for individuals, Vince, but there's no question. I mean, they have TVs, they have phones, they have, like, they hear everything. And to be quite candid, like, when you live in it, you do your best to kind of just block out the noise and do your best to focus on what you can control. But these guys are also young men, and there's a lot of pressure to live up to all these expectations, to put on a cape, to do all those things, and that's hard to do. And so I really, like, I always say this about, and I always kind of reference Jason and Jalen. I mean, I can't imagine handling what they have to handle at 20 and 22. Like, I can't fathom. I would have cracked long, long, long ago, right? So I've been given the time to grow up and be 42 now. Those guys have done a really good job of just kind of staying the course and trying to become the best they can be. The other thing I told the team, Vince, in there was all this stuff that we've been through, they'll all be better because of it. Didn't show itself on this stage by any means. They'll all be better because of it, because we learned a lot.
All right, so that was Brad Stevens immediately after the Celtics loss in Game 5 against the Milwaukee Bucks. And I thought it was an interesting press conference. I thought it was one of the more open Brad was kind of throughout the year, because Chris and I have been to plenty of Brad post-game pressers, and he's not always the most forthcoming. But I thought the most interesting comment came in his first answer, and he was kind of like he was asked, like, just what went wrong, I guess. And he was just talking about, he first talks about the game and, like, the runs in the third quarter. But then, kind of unprompted, he says, like, the Bucks, we basically lost this game at the very first game of the season, because that's when the Bucks started building championship habits. And he immediately talked about, like, building habits and, like, doing the right thing and has something to fall back on. And I feel like that's been the problem for this Celtics team the entire year, is at no point did they build habits or build, like, something they could rely on or ever come together. They struggled basically throughout the entire year, and going into the preseason at media day, all the talk was like, we got to put in work if we want to be a championship team. And, like, clearly that was what the message Brad Stevens was trying to give to the team, is like, you got to put in the work, you got to get better every day. It's a total, like, the Kaizen approach. And he immediately
Kaizen
gave credit
approach that's right
and he gave credit to the Bucks for doing exactly that. And I think that's, like, basically saying that's where they're better than us, because the Celtics never did that for the entire season.
Right. And I think we'll stick with Brad here, but Kyrie kind of did the same thing. Like, when there were questions directed at the Celtics and what they could have done better, he did turn it to Milwaukee acting this way throughout the season. It was like, we knew who they were basically from the jump. It was like, they've shown everyone who they were and why they just basically did this to us from the beginning of the year. They built those habits, and we didn't have those habits to fall back on. I thought that was pretty interesting, and like you said, it was a more forthcoming answer than you normally get from Brad, and he said it. It was what we've been saying all year. It was a roller coaster of a season. That was from him, and he said basically it was the most trying year. It was the most difficult year that he's had coaching, and I think we all knew that. I just didn't think we would ever hear it from Brad, but he kept going back and crediting Milwaukee, and all the players seemed to do that in their postseason things. But he, I think he blames himself a lot after losses, but he was more blunt about it tonight by saying, I did a bad job. I've never actually heard him say that. So I just thought it was interesting in the fact that he was so blunt with himself and blunt with the result. And obviously it's different because you don't have to play again in 2 days. But yeah, I thought it was one of Brad's more interesting and open pressers.
Yeah, no, he came out and said, I did a bad job. Another thing he talked about was how in his, like, 12 years of coaching, I think Corrales asked him this question. It was like, you didn't really have the toughness and the heart that your other teams have. And he's like, yeah, that's been, like, one of the most disappointing things. And so he takes the blame for not, like, I get for, like, doing a bad job. It's like, the question is, like, how are you supposed to instill toughness and heart into a team? I don't know how much you can blame Brad Stevens for that and how much you can bad the players, but it's like, he did do a bad job of handling all of the personalities. And I think, I don't know if it's his fault. Like, it's the one I compared it to is like when you play like seven seasons in a 2K franchise and you just accumulate too many players and you can't distribute the minutes and everyone just gets upset. And like, instead of being 89s, they're like 84s.
Yeah, they've got the red down arrows and all their chemistry, like the faces are angry and you know they're not happy. You're getting those comments. Yeah, exactly.
So it's just you had like, that's like Terry Rozier wasn't like, didn't like his minutes. Like, he kind of was in a situation where people were too, like, I'm not trying to let him off the hook. The Celtics had a bad year in which they had a lot of talent and they completely underperformed. But it, like, I don't know. It was clearly wasn't the healthiest locker room where people were happy. And when you're not happy, it's hard to like give out that all like that hustle and effort that like the Brad Stevens teams in the past have been known for.
Yeah, I think it's just that ultimate, you know, thought or kind of, I don't know, it's just depth can be a blessing and a curse. And I think we saw both ends of it this year. We saw a couple games where guys like Gordon Hayward and Terry Rozier and maybe Marcus Morris, they were all at their peak and everyone was flowing at the same time. So you had that crazy good bench unit. You had that really good starting unit and teams simply could not keep up with that. But then you have other games when guys are out there, kind of like Terry said after tonight's loss, guys are trying to get theirs and that's tough to kind of balance. And Brad hit on it after game four, saying that he needed to do a better job putting the second unit in, you know, ideal situations. And he wasn't doing a good job, and that was showing in Terry and Gordon Hayward's play. And so maybe that's one way that the blame could go to him. Maybe he just wasn't putting some of the guys in the right situations. But again, when it comes back to that, like the toughness and heart sort of thing, that comes back on the players, in my opinion. I don't think you can really put too much of that on Brad Stevens, but he's Brad, so he's going to own up to it. That's his thing.
Yeah, I think tonight's game was a perfect kind of like example of the starters, the guys who actually like statistically have been the better players this year, basically just came out with not a lot of heart, not a lot of hustle. Yeah. And you needed to insert Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart into the lineup to do that. And it feels like it's on like the individual players where it's Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart are going to do that no matter what.
Totally.
And the young guys, and it's interesting, Brad brought up like Jaylen and Jason Tatum being so young. And it makes sense that they did like, or thought they wanted to have a bigger role, like, or just didn't know what like sacrifice meant because they're only 21 and 22. And in the past they've been complete stars. So it's like, I guess it makes sense for them to be like, not necessarily, ready to kind of sacrifice for what you imagine it, you need to do to be a championship season. So I thought it was just interesting that Brad kind of covered all those topics, immediately after a press conference where normally he's just like, yeah, I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah. And the JB and Tatum thing was pretty interesting. Cause he basically said like, if I was their age, I would be screwed if I was in their situation. Like I wouldn't know how to act the way they've acted. And granted, they've been kind of in the spotlight for quite a long time. Cause they've always been premier prospects in their basketball worlds. But I thought it was kind of interesting for him to point out the fact that, you know, yeah, they're might have struggled here and there, but the fact that they're doing this at their age, which I do forget, and I kind of take for granted the fact that they are so young. I thought that was impressive, and I thought that was kind of cool for Brad to point out just because we don't normally hear that kind of thing from him.
Yeah. All right, before we move on to – there's the great thing about the Celtics, like the basically the game just ending in the third quarter is like the offseason has already started. And so we're going to – we're going to get to that in the next segment because there's so much junk to talk about that's immediately started with the offseason. So many different things about the Celtics. So many things about the NBA. The Lakers had a fun day today. Kevin Durant almost tore his ACL, according to Reggie Miller. Just some wild stuff in the NBA happened immediately after the Celtics lost.
He did tear his ACL, according to Reggie Miller.
Immediately called him out for tearing the ACL. So we're going to get to that when we come back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Welcome back to Locked On Celtics podcast. This is normally the part of the show where we would read your tweets and either using the Reigning Jays hashtag or the Reigning Junk hashtag. But I'm not going to do that because the Reigning Jays hashtag just feels pretty mean and ugly and people are upset, or people are just very nice and like thanking me, John, and Jay for our coverage this year. So to the upset people, you just got to practice some sports positivity. Breathe. We're in the new season now. Season doesn't start till Christmas, so we got a new one coming up. Season doesn't start till the draft lottery, really. And so people calm down. And to the people thanking us, thank you. But there's just so much going on. So I think what I guess we'll start there is just like the free agency is upon us. A Bleacher Report 3 minutes after
this was after the ridiculous
game ends, they put up a comic with Kyrie Irving standing in a mirror looking at the version of himself in a Lakers jersey and a Knicks jersey and a Nets jersey. And it's just like, oh, the saga begins.
Like, I can picture some employee of Bleacher Report just sitting, rubbing his palms together over a keyboard. And right when the final whistle and the horn airs, he just clicks enter to send the graphic. And he's just like chuckling to himself. That was absolutely absurd.
How long was that in drafts? Like, how long did Bleacher Report have that ready?
No, that had to have been in draft for at least the All-Star break, since the All-Star break, without question.
And I've already seen people taking his, like, post-game comments, which were, like, the most innocuous things, like, out of context. He basically said, like, what he's going to do this summer. He's going to, like, he said, like, move on from this season. And I've already seen it reported, like, Kyrie Irving, when asked what he's going to do with free agency, he's, like, moving on this summer, going to get on to the next thing. And then he said, like, what are you going to do this summer? He's like, oh, I'm just trying to get back to Boston for my safety or something like that.
Yeah, he's like, which is like a really safely and see my family, like be a human being. But the fact that he said safely, I was like, you got some plans, Kyrie? Like, what's going on here? But the best part about my post-game sound that I got was that I wasn't at the game. So I was at the Nesson office, but they have the direct feed because they had, I don't know, cameras at the game or something. So I just pulled it up on the TVs there, and so I could talk while recording it on my phone. But as I was recording it on my phone, I was audibly saying, you know, oh, all right, that's getting taken out of context, and that one's going to be ripped out of context. So when I'm listening back to it, I could just hear myself noting which would be taken out of context. And that was one of them, the one where he's like, I just want to, you know, move on to the next day and stuff, and it immediately was ripped out of context.
And it's absurd. I already have people jumping into my mentions with crazy ideas for the Celtics offseason. It's it's going to get like Kyrie, the summer of Kyrie, there's going to be so many like reports, so many, there's going to be so many reports. What a good analysis, Jam.
No, but there's going to be so many insufferable reports that are reports
and, like,
on like
Instagram likes and follows. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That's the problem. And there's going to be so many more comic strips from Bleacher Report that are just going to be
and Photoshops.
Yeah, just so insufferable. It's already gotten pretty bad. Like with people speculating. Oh my God, it was so fast. People were so quick to the trigger. I was pretty impressed.
And the thing that's wild is that Kyrie was so bad in these last four games.
He
and like his shooting, I think he saw like 102 points on 104 shots. Like his numbers were really, really bad, that the hot takes are going to be flying on sports talk radio about how he's a bum. The Celtics play better without him. Get him out of town. I don't care if he wants to come back. They should do something else. I've already had a guy in my mentions tonight saying, screw Kyrie, we need to go after Andre Drummond, Kemba Walker, Derrick Rose, and re-sign Isaiah Thomas.
Oh, my God. I love
think,
it. See,
think about that offseason plan.
This is Lou Maloney's dream is what this is. This is his dream. But, yeah, it's crazy. Real quick, if we're speaking of, like, hot takes in your mentions, the best mention – the best thing that's ever popped up in my mention was in the middle of this year, Gordon Hayward had a really bad game. And I tweeted something about Hayward basically saying, like, he's still on his way back or whatever. And this guy hopped into my mentions and said that Gordon Hayward wasn't a team player. If he was, he would have restructured his contract right after he got injured. No joke. This is exactly what he said, because that's what Tom Brady would have done if Tom Brady had suffered the same injury. And I was like, wow, that is one take. That is definitely a take.
Tom Brady also has like a weird shadow health corporation that is paid by the Patriots and has like a sneaky salary cap under the wire.
He's got loopholes on loopholes when it comes to that kind of thing.
Yeah, but that's absolutely absurd. But I'm ready for the takes of get rid of Kyrie Irving. And I feel like it's going to get so extreme that you got to like stake out a position now. So I'm officially declaring myself right now, getting the takeout early. I'm team re-sign Kyrie to the full max and basically trade anyone but Marcus Smart for Anthony Davis, because
I'm 100% with you. That's a perfect take. The people who are saying, there were people like saying that they shouldn't even have made the Kyrie trade tonight. So it was like, just pump the brakes. But yeah, I'm with you. Re-sign Kyrie, save Smart at all costs, and everyone else is on the market.
Yeah, because Kyrie is like, clearly I don't think he's the best player on a championship team, but if you get Anthony Davis, a top five player, and then put Kyrie on there, so he's not the main focal point, and it's just a great recipe for success. It sounds like Al Horford after the game has all intentions of coming back, so that is a good sign, because he is a fantastic human. He's got great eyes. He's an amazing father. He's a better person than you. And tonight he was furious and got a technical foul, which was probably the best thing I've ever seen.
He snapped harder than I've ever seen him snap. That was wild.
It was a horrendous call. It was a very, very bad call.
No, it was a very bad call. So bad that Brad Stevens pulled the ref aside before going into halftime. Like,
He gave him a lengthy lecture. That was great.
Lengthy Mad Brad lecture. It was pretty great. But I kind of enjoyed seeing Horford snap, because at that point there wasn't a lot of effort going into the half. So I was like, well, at least someone still got some fire in him.
Yeah, and it's just like so not what you expect from Al Horford. He's just not that like fiery guy. And I kind of like want to see that more on the court, like directed at opponents. He just does the flex. He's so cool, calm, and collected. It's just not in him. But he was pissed off, and it was fantastic.
Rightfully so.
Moving on in the junk drawer, I think we got to pour some out for probably the last game of the Celtics Terry Rozier era and the Celtics Marcus Morris era. And so we remember both of them fondly, especially Terry Rozier. He had comments after the game where basically he was like, no comment when asked about his contract. And you know what? I think it speak for most Celtics fans, where just say like, Terry Rozier, we love you. You're a great guy. We've found you endlessly entertaining for 4 years. We had some great times together. But you know what? Go out, start, and get your money, and prosper elsewhere.
It's time for us to go our separate ways. It's been a real fun time, but it's time to go. It's really time to go. And I think he would agree with that too. I think it's a mutual parting. And by the no comment comment, I think it says all that needs to be said.
I mean, we'll tell all the little busters to shut up. We about that cook life no more. I don't hoop no more. I'm about that cook life.
I don't hoop no more. All I do is this. Got my boy right here. That's it.
And my boy right here.
we'll continue to, we'll shut up all the little busters always. But I think you might be better off doing that in Phoenix.
Kyrie, I mean, Terry's been with the shits, and he will always been with the shits. But also, Mook Morris, basically the best player in the Celtics playoff run, which is absolutely insane. He started out the season hot. He started out the playoffs hot. He was basically, in the past two games, the only one who could do anything good. He basically single-handedly got Giannis in foul trouble in game four. And the Celtics couldn't respond, and that's when the season completely crumbled. But Mook Morris, I'm going to miss him, man.
Me too.
I wish they could re-sign him. I just don't – like, he just deserves to get paid way more than the Celtics can give him, and he's been fantastic. And he's just – like, he's going to end up – on the Warriors or something, or it's just, I hope he gets a ring. I hope he does something cool.
I want him to get a ring so bad. I love Mook. He was awesome. Off the court too. He was one of the more straightforward and blunt dudes when it came to pressers and post game sound. And he was just a really real dude, but yeah, I don't really see the Celtics being able to sign him and bring him back. I mean, he's going to get paid somewhere, and he definitely deserves it. But yeah, he was the only guy who, I mean, Smart brought energy the last two games, 'cause he always does. But Mook was bringing energy and also scoring. Like, he was the best player consistently in this series by far for the Celtics. And we've come full circle, because to everyone's shock, that was the case in October and November as well.
Yeah, so it's, that's probably the most bittersweet moment. I mean, the game was absolutely absurd, but because it was so bad, but it's a sad moment. Last probably Tito three sticks game, last Mook game. We have so much more to talk about too, because the Los Angeles Lakers today tried to hire Ty Lue as their coach, but refused to give him. Well, reportedly he was looking for 5 years, and they only wanted to give him 3 years, $18 million, and he just said, "No, I have a championship pedigree," which you can't really argue with. And so negotiations completely fell apart. There's also a rumor that they wanted to put Jason Kidd on his coaching staff. So
I mean, that would be wild.
It would be absolutely wild. No one wants Jason Kidd anywhere near their coaching staff. But also, take some solace,
also,
Celtics fans.
The craziest thing I took from this entire Ty Lue thing with him, you know, basically the two going their separate ways. I don't know who decided to go their separate way first. It was basically a you broke up with me, no, you broke up with me kind of situation. But since when is Kurt and Linda Rambis calling the shots for the Lakers? Where that came out of the clouds? All of a sudden it was like, yeah, Kurt Rambis overruled the Buss family. That was the final straw. It's like, what? Like, when? Why is he calling the shots?
Kurt Rambis, he's the shadow commissioner, man. He just comes in and goes on interviews, flies the jet. I don't know what he's done. He has secrets. I don't trust Kurt Rambis as far as I could throw him.
Kurt Rambis definitely has, because I think he's technically, I looked it up, I think he's technically like a senior advisor to the Lakers or something like that. But he's got blackmail on a lot of people around this league, I feel like. He's just like, you know, slowly but surely racking up blackmail here and there so he can just have a role with every single team and just control every front office in the league.
And, I mean, at this point, it's not working out for the Lakers because they are without a coach. They have basically LeBron James. They have some other guys, but it's just on the day when the Celtics really could look poorly, it's a nice thank you to the Lakers for stealing some of the pregame stink that the Celtics had on them. Moving on to probably the most important NBA story in tonight is nothing to do with the Celtics, but it's Kevin Durant out in Golden State. He strained his right calf, but when it first happened, it was a non-contact injury, and he kind of looked around and like he got hit in the Achilles, and Reggie Miller immediately went, "Oh, tore his Achilles, 1,000%, tore it. Just know what happens." He tore his Achilles. So for a while there, literally my tweet deck just exploded with everyone just going, "Oh no, oh no, oh no." It was that tweet basically 75 times, and then everyone just assuming that he tore his Achilles. And then there was like, "Oh my God, what's going to happen to KD's free agency?" That's still a crazy question. You don't know what his injury is going to be, what's going to happen in this, like with the Warriors moving forward, what's going to happen in this series. It was a whole bunch of just crazy things. The Warriors actually ended up winning, and it was really weird that, like, all of a sudden Steph Curry could just, like, turn it on again, which is really kind of a bizarre storyline there. But thankfully, he just strained his calf. I don't know what his timetable is, but for a while there, it thought the whole basketball world had crumbled.
Yeah,
like, he could have lost a whole season. Like, it would have been insane.
Yeah, that would have changed so many. It was, like, one gigantic universal gasp from the basketball world, and I think it was Anthony Slater from The Athletic tweeted out. He was like, there are basically so many ramifications on this Achilles, if that is the case, whether it be the remainder of the NBA playoffs, whether it be his free agency, whether it be the entirety of next basketball season. Like, there were so many things clinging to that. So when the Warriors, you know, PR account or whatever officially tweeted that it was a right calf strain, it was like a universal sigh of relief. It was like, oh,
I think Shams.
Okay.
I think Shams had it before Warriors PR.
Shams. I think whenever there's like injuries like that or something like that, I think Shams can just teleport into medical rooms because he did that with an Aaron Baines injury earlier this season, where Baines came off the court, and I remember we were all at the game, and then he comes off the court, and no joke, like 4 minutes later, he's like, "Ah, now he'll be fine," or like, "No, he has a broken wrist or whatever." Like, he gets these so quickly, it's a little unnerving.
It's a little insane and a little uncomfortable, but Kevin Durant, so presumably he'll be back. I don't know enough about right calf strains, and I guess it depends on the severity, so they don't know that yet. But immediately if I thought he tore his ACL or, I mean, tore his Achilles, I was like, well, it has ramifications on this season. Like, I don't even know if I think the Warriors could still win or beat the Rockets, and they certainly helped themselves by winning tonight, but after seeing how good Giannis has looked, it just makes feels like the Warriors would be vulnerable and completely opens up the NBA Finals, which with a fully healthy Kevin Durant, you think would be the Warriors to win. But now I think that the Raptors, Bucks, I guess Rockets still have a chance to come back in the series. But the Raptors and Bucks, have whoever comes out of the East has so much better chance of beating the Warriors now, which is kind of what you everyone's been bitching about for the entire season. Like, oh, the Warriors ruined everything. Like, now it's giving up to be an amazing finals.
Yeah, I mean, now you got it, especially if this injury lingers around. And again, it's what we talked about at the beginning of the show. Like, I don't see how anyone can easily guard Giannis. Like, I just don't see that happening. I don't care who you are. And I know the Warriors are a ridiculous defensive team when they're at full strength, but I just don't see that happening. So that opens up a whole can of worms in terms of the rest of the playoffs.
And so we'll see that moving forward. I'm curious if you've learned to take notes on your junk while watching the game, if you've brought anything to this junk drawer.
Yeah, I brought a bunch to this junk drawer. There was a lot of weird stuff because when the team that you're mainly focused on is getting absolutely smacked, you can focus on things like Danica Patrick and Aaron Rodgers. And
oh, yeah.
You can focus on like Kyrie Irving changing his shoes and shit like that. But that Danica Patrick thing was kind of weird just because there was a random dude buying her drinks while Aaron Rodgers was right there. Kind of a bold move to just start buying Danica Patrick drinks while his MVP caliber quarterback is right there. I thought that was kind of hysterical.
If I know Wisconsin, like I think I know Wisconsin, they were probably buying the drinks for Aaron Rodgers and he was turning them down and giving
them
to Danica Patrick.
That's so true, actually. That is a very valid point and you're probably right. That's a very good way to look at it.
I thought the Bucks crowd was pretty good tonight. They chanted Bucks in five at one point, but let's keep hearing the junk.
Yeah, no, the Bucks crowd was good. I thought there was I don't know when it was in the game, but after a whistle, there was a clear whistle around half court, and Eric Bledsoe went to the rim just to lay it in, and Smart, like, tracked him down after the whistle and tossed his lamp. I loved that. I thought that was great because that was, again, another time when there was, like, basically no life from the Celtics. So seeing him toss his layup after the whistle, I thought was pretty great.
Smart was classic tonight. Other hustle plays where he's just like stealing in the backcourt. I was ready to fight Brooke Lopez when he like fouled him hard and he came up injured. There's the story. I think not a story, but Gary Washburn tweeted that like he looked in like to be in a lot of pain after the game. And it's like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. He was probably just a warrior out there and playing through a bunch. So, all Harold Smarf for all he's kind of had to go through this season with his mom and just being fucking the man. He's just the best Celtics.
He is the man. Like I said it like kind of joking before, but really like protect him at all costs. If he gets traded this offseason, I will be crushed. I will be completely and utterly crushed because he's the man. But yeah, it doesn't really surprise me that he was sort of banged up after the game. What else? What do you think of Kyrie's shoe changes? Because
I didn't notice this time.
Yeah, he changed into like they almost looked like a cotton candy colored. Like,
oh yeah, he has those ones
of the Kyrie's. Yeah, but like he does this a lot when he changes shoes, and I think people like to make a big deal of it, but I think it's kind of overblown. I don't know. I kind of get annoyed with the whole shoe change alert.
I mean, it was cool when Isaiah Thomas did it and he said his old shoes didn't have no buckets in them. And then he actually went out and he was a lot better. But Kyrie was just bad the entire time. And also, he probably has so many options for different shoes and different colors that it's no longer an important thing just because I've seen so many different Kyries that who knows what's going on. Clearly none of them had any buckets in them.
There were zero buckets in any colorway of any version of Kyrie's this entire series. It was miserable. The only other junk thing that I had was we've spoken before about Mike Budenholzer looking like a giant infant, essentially.
Yes.
At all times. He was actually smiling like a normal human being on the bench today. I guess that can happen when you're up by 20 points in a series-clinching game. But he looked like a normal, smiling adult tonight, and I thought that was very noteworthy.
Oh, that's such a nice, pleasant way to compliment Mike Budenholzer. And congrats to Mike Budenholzer. Sam Sheehan described him the other night as Frazier with low testosterone. And so I thought that was
great. Which was awesome.
But yeah, congrats to them. The only other junk thing I have is that the Celtics were so bad that a friend of the program and our the rapper of our intro, Millie's, promised to change the intros to Rain and Jays, where he said the best team in the East can't get complacent. So look forward to what Millie's is going to come up with much more realistic expectations. It's just going to be a very, like a very modest.
Yeah, that's where complacency gets you, is what the lyric will be.
Kyrie has left, and now we're rebuilding.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a darker theme song, but it'll be new and fresh.
All right, that is it for me, if you're all out of junk.
I'm out of junk, Jam. I'm out of junk.
All right, and just like the Celtics season is also out of junk, I don't think that transition to the end of the show made any sense, but I'm going to roll with it. Thank you guys for listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast for the entire season. We're going to still keep on trucking along with daily shows, at least for the rest of the NBA playoffs. But thank you guys for listening to us. If you're a listener, please subscribe, rate us 5 stars. You can listen to us on anywhere you get podcasts. You can listen to the new Himalaya app and put us on there, and they'll curate a feed for you. But you can also listen to us, you know, wherever you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the interwebs. But if you do, tell friends and rate us that 5 stars, because it does help us out. Chris Granum from Nesson.com, thank you for joining me. And this has been another episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King.